But suddenly, three shots ring out. It's the doctor, Ben Gunn, and another of the stockade group. Three of the pirates are wounded or dead, and the others flee. On their way back, the doctor tells Jim what had happened. Ben Gunn had found the treasure during his years of wandering on the island and had carted it to a cave. So the doctor gave Long John the useless map and took his group to the cave where he felt they'd be safer from disease. He knew Jim would be in danger when the pirates found the treasure gone, so leaving the squire in charge of the gold, he'd come to rescue him. He had sent Gunn ahead to sing and try to scare the pirates off, or at least delay them until he could bring help. The men reached the ship and sailed to the point nearest Gunn's cave. Then they joined the squire at the cave. The squire speaks sharply to Long John, but promises he won't be prosecuted. Captain Smollett welcomes Jim, but is unfriendly to Long John. In the corner is the treasure. Jim is struck with the thought that at least 17 men from the Hispaniola have died because of it. They all sit down to have a good meal, and everyone seems contented, even Long John, who sits quietly out of the firelight, once again the mild and courteous seaman. The next morning, the group starts to transport the gold a mile over land to the beach. From there, it's carried 3 sea miles to the ship. Jim's task is to pack the various coins, English, French, Spanish, Portuguese, and Oriental. Day after day, he counts until his back aches. On the third night, they hear the drunken singing of the three pirates who escaped the shooting at the treasure hole. After some discussion, they decide they will maroon the pirates on the island. They finish loading all the treasure and pile some supplies on the beach for the three pirates: food, tools, medicine, clothing, rope, and tobacco. As the ship begins to sail away, the three pirates appear and kneel in the sand, begging to be picked up. When their pleas are ignored, one of the men pulls out his musket and fires at the ship. The men take cover, and soon the highest rock of Treasure Island has disappeared from view. They sail to the nearest South American port and disembark to put together another crew. Dawn is breaking when they return to Hispaniola. Ben Gunn is alone on the ship. He tells them Long John has escaped. He cut a hole through a ship wall, stole a bag of gold, then took off with one of the small boats. Jim thinks it's a small price to be rid of him. The ship returns to England with only 5 of the original crew left. All of the men receive an ample share of the treasure. Captain Smollett retires from the sea. Ben Gunn spends all his money in only 19 days, but he's given lodging and becomes a notable singer in the church choir. Of Long John Silver, Jim says he has heard no more. He hopes the old pirate is living comfortably because, as Jim says, his chances of comfort after death are very small. Jim says he will never return to Treasure Island. His worst dreams are when he hears the surf booming around the island, and he starts upright in his bed, with the shrill voice of the parrot ringing in his ears, "Pieces of eight! Pieces of eight!" This is the end of Robert Louis Stevenson's classic adventure story, Treasure Island. The people of Victorian England, experiencing the rise of realistic fiction, were enchanted by this simple action story in which everything that happened was clear-cut and judgeable. Unlike the serious problem novels dominating literature, and unlike real life itself, Stevenson's story about treasure, pirates, a courageous boy, and a few good men was simple and straightforward. There was nothing to consider, nothing to debate, and nothing to cause controversy. There was also nothing depressing about the story, unlike other fiction of the time, because the good was clearly good and the good triumphed over evil and was rewarded. But the simplicity of Stevenson's work can disguise his craftsmanship and the unique talent required to plot a story of such consistent suspense and to create such memorable, distinct characters. His simplicity gives his writing an edge and sharpness of style that lingers long in the imagination. His pure enjoyment of his own stories and his desire to please the reader, just as he's originally tried to please his stepson with the story, are what make his works so charming. The poet Robert Frost once said, "Let the sound of Stevenson go through your mind empty, and you will realize that he never took himself other than as an amusement." That indeed was the author's chief goal: to amuse, to entertain, to thrill and delight. His ability was the sheer power of his storytelling. And although trends in literature come and go, good storytelling is always at a discount, and it's something for which readers, young and old, never lose their appreciation.